Hey, what's going on? Happy Wednesday to you. Thanks for making us part of your day. Vic Nazar, Randy Janda, A-Dog running the show. We got a skeleton crew today. Just a regular amount of people, but a skeleton crew.
We had a five-man unit the other day. Now we're killing penalties with three dudes right now.
Five on three.
Two-man advantage.
Welcome to the People's Show. You can always interact with us, engage with us, be part of the show. We always appreciate it. 650-650 in the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox, the smart alternative. Visit Dunbar Lumber on Bridge Street in Ladner or Arbutus in Vancouver, online at dunbarlumber.com. How's the day?
What's going on, Vic? Anytime you walk in here into the studio, you open up the text inbox. It's not an actual box, folks. It's on our computers.
What's in the box?
What's in the box? We've got... I love this text. Get your head out of yesteryear's ass is a text we walk into. So clearly the boys on Canucks Hour were having a good chat and, you know, strolling down memory lane, I think.
But, Evgeny Malkin is a Canuck. That's what we're talking about.
There we go.
Soon to be.
I see.
Jamie hasn't stopped with that yet.
Oh. Still, hey, I agree with him. We're still going.
Stop.
I mean, it's a fever dream. It's not going to happen, but it's fun to imagine.
Well, more rumblings coming out of Pittsburgh. I know Brian Burke mentioned yesterday that, hey, if it doesn't meet the term, you could have one back, you could have both back, you could have none of them back. And now you've also got more Evgeny Malkin hitting the market chatter. So maybe. I love Malkin. I don't think it's going to work.
We'll see.
I don't think so.
We'll see. We'll talk about that later on in the show. We do have a lot of things planned today, including JT Miller talk. How about that? Mike McKenna will join us in about a half hour. Sam Cause in about an hour. A bit more than that. Start keep previewing the NHL draft. And also Damon Rangula from The Ringer will join us. You can follow him at Damon R. Getting ready for a fun day in NBA free agency.
Yeah, tomorrow. Damon's a great follow on NBA Twitter as well. So if you haven't, he's hilarious, but he's also brings some insight. He's been doing some work with The Ringer and Kevin O'Connor. But Bix, some huge talking points in the NBA we'll get to. But this is hockey offseason, man. This is the time we've been waiting for.
Still nothing has happened as I check my fake watch.
Okay, but Elliot sending out a tweet, 5 hours ago, saying Boston coaching and Kevin Fiala.
I didn't even have breakfast today because that tweet alone sustained me for the whole day.
Yeah, we were hungry.
No, I don't need to eat.
We were hungry, and Elliot knew this. Yeah. So something to watch during our show. Maybe something happens.
The next 3 hours, this is Fiala watch. Dun, dun, dun.
My guy.
Yeah, your guy.
The dream scenario.
A lot of people's guys. I'm pro Fiala.
Yesterday, if you missed the show, we're talking about what's a dream scenario of realistic options in free agency and trade player transaction. For me, that guy is Kevin Fiala. Where does he land, though? Does he stay in Minnesota? Unlikely, but something to watch for other show.
But we did want to start with JT Miller. And I want to play this out for you. Because for how quiet it has been, both contract talks, trade speculation. You know, we sit here and say, what about this team? What about this team? What about this team? That's us talking about, hey, are these possible destinations? You know, we've talked about the odd team that's cropped up, Washington, Columbus, and we love to revert back to what happened, you know, a few months ago, the Rangers. And there are destinations, don't get me wrong. Toronto could be in the mix. Pittsburgh could be in the mix. But here's the thing. The contract, it does feel like the first attempt from Vancouver's point of view is, hey, what's the number? They want to find out what the number is. And you push that to July 13th and a little bit thereafter. But I think maybe the way we approach this, Randy, is have we kind of overstated really where the true value is for JT Miller? And when you play out the game of what his contractual value is it less than we might realize?
One thing that I think we all have to be mindful of is, and the Mika Zibanejad comp that, you know, I mentioned, I think, 6 months ago, it was just, we were kind of spitballing, me, you, and Sat here on the show, of Zibanejad would be the high number. And over time, we've heard that number come up, that name come up. But the comp, that's for the agent. Like, that Zibanejad number, 8.5. If I'm the player agent, damn right I'm looking at that one. That's the high end. So in terms of what the team thinks, what's the comp for the team? Because I feel like all the reports we're hearing, and every time Zibanejad is linked, the player would love that deal. Any player would love that deal.
I'd love that deal.
But if you are, yeah, good luck in radio. but if you have an option as a team, okay, what's the Canucks number? What's that realistic number? Because I think anytime you're an agent and a player, you're saying, we're going to shoot for the moon.
What's really interesting is the few times we've heard Jim Brother talk, whether it's on this station, he's done a number of pods as well. You know, he's referenced 6 years a lot. And there's a certain level of confidence as well when Rutherford talks. And you kind of go through it all. What's really striking me is JT Miller is kind of a contract outlier. As in, he's kind of creating his own market that, you know, contracts are meant to be precedents. Okay, this is where it was set. We'll hair up a little bit here, go a hair below here, and we'll find the right kind of sweet spot. You go through it, Randeep. It is really difficult to find comparables. I know you mentioned Mika Zibanejad. It's true, but to your point, I'm sure the agent would want that one a lot more than the Vancouver Canucks. And does that really fit? Because you go start going through of it, and this is what I wanted to do. Kind of see what's real and what's not as far as real comparables. Mika Zibanejad, when he signed his deal, again, it was $68 million total, for 8 years, 8.5 over 8. He signed that at age 28. JT's not 20. He's not 28 anymore.
And it kicks in this year.
And it kicks in when he's 29.
Yeah.
And I know you're thinking, well, 29, 30, that's not really a big difference. I think it's easy to say that when it's 25 and 27. 27 and 24, somewhere in that range. Because you're in the middle of someone's career. When you're at the extremes of an age range, and this is the age that a lot of people worried about getting in long-term deals. 30. You go through the league right now, there aren't a lot of current deals that were signed at age 30 that exist in the realm of the contract we're worried about for JT Miller. Your number was 8.5 by 7.
Yeah.
They don't really exist if they're signed at age 30. There's a couple that, hey, were signed at age 32, some legacy contracts, like a Nick Backstrom contract.
And the Blake Wheeler one is probably one of the worst contracts right now, the way it's trending, and that was signed at the age 32.
And it kicked in when when he turned 33.
Yeah.
Same thing for Nick Backstrom. They kicked in at age 33. So we're still a few years removed from that, but also, Blake Wheeler, you're paying a bit of a Winnipeg tax, you're in that win now window, and you do that. Nick Backstrom was, hey man, you've been here forever. You're a legacy player, one of the most iconic players in franchise history. Here's a 46 over 5 deal. You really go through it. The only two that even stand out to me, and this is tough too because it's signed at age 29 and they kicked in when it turned 30, but I'm not sure we've talked about these two players enough in relation to JT Miller because of the season JT's had, and this is why I talk about he might be setting his own market. And this is where we swing so wildly on this conversation because when you are the outlier, you're making your own market, and that's why it can be difficult to find out what the true number is. And the two contracts I do look at that were signed at age 29 and kick in when they're 30. Max Pacioretty did this, 28 over 4, and Logan Couture did this, 64 over 8.
And so, we're a few years removed from those deals.
Yes. But generally speaking, these contracts, when signed at age 30, and this is what JT Miller is looking at, his contract ends when he turns 30. There's not really a precedent for that.
No, there isn't. And those two players, so we kind of talked about how you're playing the Winnipeg tax with the Wheeler situation and, you know, other variables on those contracts. But with the Logan Couture one, you talked about it 8 years. $8 million, so 64. You're paying up a very healthy contract here. But here's the problem with San Jose and any deal San Jose's made in the last, I would say, 4 or 5 years. Let's throw Tomas Hertl in that conversation as well. Doug Wilson, when he was doing business with these players, he was coming from a position of desperation of keeping the window open.
Mm-hmm.
So Tomas Hertl on the free market, I think we can very much argue whether he makes, you know, he's probably in that 7 range, but is he making 8 anywhere else? Probably not. I don't think so. Logan Couture, the comp that you talk about, put up monster numbers in the playoffs. Regular season-wise, he hasn't been really a consistent point-per-game player. But what it, once again, was that Doug Wilson making deals because he was just trying to extend that window? So not only was that an overpay and a comp that I look at and say, yeah, if I'm yet again the agent for JT Miller, I'm looking at that and saying, hey, my guy's a better player in the regular season. My guy deserves more than that. You're looking at a team at that moment in time, San Jose was overpaying everybody. They just wanted their last chance at the cup. That's clearly not happening anymore. So I look at that deal and I say, that one, you have to treat differently. Once again, if I'm the agent, I'm saying, yep, that let's go with it. But if you're the team, especially signing at that age range, it's a tricky proposition anyways. But you got to remember, that team was in a different mindset than the Canucks are right now.
I'll put a pause in this conversation because we said we were on Kevin Fiala watch for the next 3 hours.
Uh-oh.
Mike Russo just reporting. According to sources, the Wild have traded pending free agent Kevin Fiala to the LA Kings for a 2022 first-round pick and Brock Faber, the right shot D-man.
So you can scratch one team off the list for a JT Miller. That's a name that we'd heard, Brock Faber, the LA Kings. So the LA Kings, Elliot Friedman is now confirming that report as well. You've got a 2022 first-round pick, Brock Faber going to the Minnesota Wild, and Kevin Fiala joining the Pacific Division. So a team that has Dano, Anze Kopitar, Quinton Byfield. You've got some good defensemen there as well. You had Adrian Kempe, who had an unbelievable year. A very fast skater, I should mention as well. Now you add another guy that is super, super dangerous in transition, Kevin Fiala. Pacific Division just got a little bit more stronger.
And the LA Kings tap into that right-hand D-market surplus that they have and say, hey, look, we got Doughty, we got Durzi, we got Matt Roy, we got Brant Clark, we got Helge Granz, we got Brock Faber. That's six guys all on the right that have legitimate NHL profiles, whether they're prospect or playing. I think I might even be forgetting a name there. Let's remove one from that equation, Brock Faber. And they start maybe, you want to say, from the low end of that list, and even though Brock Faber is a tremendous prospect, let's go give up that in a first-round pick. We go get our guy. They have a bit of money to play with so they can give Fiala that contract that they probably want, that he probably wants, and they kind of solve a thing in their depth chart. I'd be surprised if that's it for LA, too.
Oh, they've got that need. They could go and get a Jacob Chikrin as well on the left side of the
fence,
right? I was going to
say, a left-side D-man. Jordan Spence was the name I was forgetting.
For sure. So, okay, on the price, because I think that's one of the things we're going to take away from this. They give up a first-round pick, which will be a late first-round pick. They give up a second-round pick, 45th overall, which was Brock Faber. And if you're looking at that deal, you're saying, wait a second, for a team that, you know, that first-round pick's not going to be not a high one as well. So it's not like a late into the first round. It's still a decent one. It's in the 20. I'm going to have to double-check where the LA Kings currently sit in the draft order. But, you know, that's a situation you're looking at and saying, they have to pay Kevin Fiala.
That's 19th overall.
So 19th overall is a pretty decent pick. And you get a second-round pick in Faber, who is somebody that has performed well at the collegiate ranks. He's obviously an important player. He's
captain, if I'm not mistaken.
He's also from Minnesota, yep. Which, you know, when we've been talking about Brock Besser and the links to going back home and all that, that's actually going for Brock Faber here. Now, the question I do have is, what does this mean? Because we're going to talk about prices for players, and the first name I thought of was a JT Miller.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you can take one team off the board for JT Miller. What does this do for a price? If the Canucks are considering trading a Brock Besser, what does that mean for that price? Because similar situation. Kevin Fiala, high-end player, 85 points last year. RFA, still needs to get paid. He still needs to sign that contract. His qualifying offer is, you know, in that $5.1 million range. So
a little bit different from the scenario that the Canucks are facing with Brock Besser,
who's at $7.5 million, but it does give you an idea of price at the very least, where Kevin Fiala is on the high end, and they got a 19th pick overall and a highly sought-after prospect on the right side of defense.
An interesting start to the NHL offseason. The trade market, yeah, kind of sets the standard, and we'll see how this carry forward. I think the name that jumps out the most, if you're relating it to Vancouver, would probably be Brock Besser just because of the RFA status. And is there something in the range of this that you would look at and say, hey, for a second rounder and a prospect or a late first and a prospect, is that something you would entertain?
I think it is a very real conversation, especially if you're looking at, okay, how do you gravitate, how do you adjust the deal for a Brock Besser, though? Because Fiala, as I mentioned, 85-point player. What is the return on a Brock Besser? Is it similar? right? You're not going to get a...
It would be less than this.
You're not going to...
The QO offer clouds it. The talent discrepancy...
Totally.
Slowly depresses that return.
So that 19th overall, it's a very good pick for Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Because they're being able to maybe be in that... We'll see, and we'll talk to Sam Cosentino a little bit later on in the show. But you're still looking at players that are very good. Whether it's a Kevin Korchinski, Owen Pickering... go through the list. We could probably throw even Brad Lambert in that discussion. You're picking up somebody of quality in that range, even at 19, somebody who might be able to fall. Now, for Brock Besser, you're probably looking at a late first-round pick or an early, you know, depending on the level of prospect. So
we'll probably say more like a second.
Exactly.
Again, that QO thing is...
It's huge. $7.5 million is staring a lot of teams in the face, including the Vancouver Canucks.
Well, what's fascinating is that the type of teams that would probably want to trade for Brock might be the teams that are trying to get to the playoffs or that contending group. And so if you're looking for a second-round pick, does that get automatically get kicked to the late second? Or do you just say, hey, it's got to be a first? If you're in this window, we can't take a late second. We need a late first instead.
No, if I'm looking at a deal in that sense, it's got to be a late first or an early second mm-hmm. for a team that, hey, who's probably going to be in that range? New Jersey Devils types of teams, maybe somebody of that nature. But, yeah, I think the key point here is this is the Minnesota Wild essentially seeing a team that, you know, had a good season for their standards but wanted to be aggressive. And I think we've been talking about New Jersey a lot. We've been talking about Philly a lot. We've been talking about a bunch of different teams. But L.A. was on the opposite, where they actually had a better season than most people expected, so they wanted to be aggressive. And how do you do that? You end up using the cap space you have. You end up using the young talent that you've picked over the years, and you maximize on that. And that's, you know, when you are... That's the difference between the Canucks and the LA Kings right now. The Canucks have to add that depth. They mm-hmm. need more picks. They're not in a position to really give up any draft picks or young players at this point in time. So
their assets are roster players right now.
No, and big, like looking at this deal, and it was my dream scenario and whether you could make it happen or not, Kevin Fiala. But the reality is...
You were never paying this sort of
price. The Canucks don't have a Brock Faber in the system.
No.
The Canucks are not in a position to give up their 15th overall pick because they need so many more prospects coming through. So there's only a few teams that can compete with the LA Kings in this regard. We know Montreal has a lot of picks. We know, Anaheim has now got prospects as well. There's a couple of teams that have had to have a few years of pain or be not a very good team to amass all of those. The Canucks haven't been that. Even though they haven't been able to make the playoffs, they went all in last year. They don't have Dylan Gunther. They don't have first-round picks. So that Kevin Fiala scenario was a bit of a pipe dream to begin with, but that tells you how certain teams, especially the LA Kings, they could actually, to your point, move still, you know, a few other key prospects for a Jacob Chychrun, which is a very realistic proposition.
That's honestly the name I thought that they would probably be jumping in first for. We'll see how the market plays out. But they have a big need at left-sided D as well. Mikey Anderson is basically the only guy that they have. Tobias Bjornfoot is someone that's, you know, developing. But the way Mikey Anderson played, you got to give him a contract too. But they could use some depth there on the left-handed side. It'd be interesting to see if they go that route as well. But, hey, we're sitting here in the Pacific Division. We're talking about, hey, Edmonton, they had a successful run. Where's Calgary's window at? Do they lose Goudreau? Do they lose Kachuk in a trade as well? Vancouver trying to make improvements. Vegas making an improvement as well, just internally. The Kings just kind of sent a message to everyone and said, hey, we intend to stay in the playoffs.
And if you are, I think Vancouver's still a work in progress. We're going to see what happens. Mm-hmm. But if you're Calgary right now, you're saying, uh-oh.
This is worse news for Calgary than I think it is for Vancouver.
This is, yeah, bad news for the Calgary Flames because there's so much uncertainty with that market right now. But if I'm the Edmonton Oilers as well, you know, you go to the Western Conference Final, you have some issues that you need to sort out within your own roster. But now you've got a team in the LA Kings with staying power. With Kopitar and Dano down the middle, you've got an 80-point player, you've got a 35-goal scorer in Adrian Kempe, you've got Fiala who put up 80 points as well. You know, this is a team that's going to be here for a long time, and they still, just imagine if their young guys start to hit. Byfield hasn't hit officially mm-hmm. yet. Some of those defensemen start to hit. This is a very scary team over the next 4 or 5 years. We got this question from Snoop the Dog. Does the Fiala deal open up the Wild as a potential team to flip, basically bring in Brock Besser? Maybe Brock wants to go back home to Minnesota. The question there, Vic, is money.
Yeah.
Right? Like, are they in a position to make deals like that?
Minnesota's goal right now is find
cheap players.
Cheap labor. That is their only goal right now. Just to remind everyone, they have $12.7 million in dead cap this year, $14.7 million next year, $14.7 million the year after. And you still have Kirill Kaprizov. You're going to be a marginal playoff team. As much as we're talking about a step back, you know, what is really leaving this team? Right now it's just Kevin Fiala,
yep.
But you get Brock Faber, who could be in the lineup as soon as next year.
And you're hoping that Matt Boldy now is going to be a very prominent player in that lineup. He was pretty good last year, but
he came in late.
He came in late, and he played very well.
Mm-hmm.
So now you're saying, all right, we need you to lean in. We need you to be better. You've also got other options there as well, younger players that are making it through. Similar text from Greg the Dairy Farmer asking, what does this mean? Could they be making a move for JT Miller? I doubt it, based on that cap requirement. They can't. They're going to have a very difficult time squeezing players in if they try to add more. We got this one. What are you guys talking about? Second rounder for Besser. Where did we pick him up in the draft? Sometimes I don't know what you're thinking about.
I think for context, we're both kind of on the wavelength of you get a prospect,
yes,
plus a second rounder.
The question was, if Brock Besser is on the market, if he's a player the Canucks would consider trading, Kevin Fiala is a high-end comparison.
Mm-hmm.
So what type of package would you require if Fiala goes for a first rounder this year at pick 19 and Brock Faber? What is that package for Brock Besser? So is that a second rounder and a good prospect? Or is that a late first and a good prospect? It wouldn't just simply be a second rounder.
No, sorry. And apologies if that wasn't clear. But it's very much building around the trade that we just saw. What's the torque down version of it? Because Kevin Fiala is a more premium asset than Brock Besser. 650-650. Same thought from Gordy Locke coming in. Would you guys be satisfied, this is on Twitter, if that was the return for Besser? If New Jersey was the runner-up for Fiala, does that make them the front-runners for the next available person on the market? Now, this is where you got to go through the whole process and say, okay, you missed out on one. Do you want to spend more for a Matt Tkachuk or a Patrick Laine, or do you want to see what the price is for someone less than that, right? This is the market-setting trade all of a sudden. This is the latest precedent, and we're just talking about precedents with JT Miller's contract.
Yep.
But now this is the scale. Everything goes above or beyond where Kevin Fiala is.
And there was a link, the New Jersey mentions a really good one, because there were talks about, does Nico Hischier, you know, does that link make sense with Fiala? Both play on the same national program, know each other, all of that stuff. So if you're New Jersey, we've heard those conversations around Connor Garland, JT Miller, Kevin Fiala, the list goes on from there. How aggressive does that make them? If you don't want to miss out on a high-end winger, and you want to take that next step, especially with a veteran piece, there's a lot of young players on that. What does that mean moving forward here? And that's going to be a really, you know, we're talking about the first domino to fall. This is a huge one. This is a high-impact player that has moved to the Pacific Division, but there's a couple of teams that missed out. There's even rumblings about the Ottawa Senators potentially being interested as well. I think they have other priorities, but if you are searching for a high-impact winger, especially in your top six, now all of a sudden, Vic, the focus does shift to Vancouver because Miller, Besser, Garland are the three names we've heard. And on most teams in the NHL, all three of those guys are playing in a top six somewhere. What's the next move? Because it feels like eyes are pointed at Vancouver.
Chris Johnson also reporting the LA Kings will sign Fiala to a long-term extension as part of this trade. So we'll see what that number looks like as well. We'll get into more of this conversation with Mike McKenna from DailyFaceoff.com. And also just curious if it means like what this means for Brock Besser, obviously, and also what it means for JT Miller, because it's another team that spent capital, spent assets to make a move, and Kevin Fiala had 85 points. Is this a relevant trade for the JT Miller trade market, or will JT get more because he had more points, or will he get less because he was older? Interesting spot for the Vancouver Canucks to be in. After a trade like that, again, Kevin Fiala going from Minnesota to LA for 19th overall, and Brock Faber, the right shot D prospect from the LA Kings. More on the way. We'll talk to Mike McKenna next here on the Home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
In this house, the win comes first.
Horvat one-on-one to the Blues line. A beautiful toe-trigger.
Welcome back to the show, The People's Show. We finally got a trade in the NHL. Kevin Fiala departing Minnesota, arriving in L.A., Brock Faber and a first-round pick going the other way, 19th overall is what it comes out to. So they didn't do the traditional three pieces to get volume. They said, you know what, we'll just take two. We'll trust our scouting staff, and we got a big belief in someone from the University of Minnesota and Brock Faber coming to Minnesota, and they make their deal.
Quick reminder on who runs the draft for the Minnesota Wild. One Judd Brackett. Mm. So always a connection as well. We do have some financials on this as well. So Kevin Fiala, if you're worried about his bank account, worry no more. $7.9 million annual average over 7 years. So the man is going to make just shy of $8 million, age 25, young player. So they're going to have him until he's about 32, 33 years of age.
And what do we always say? Total money. Total money. Focus on the total money. That comes out to about $55 million, just a hair over. All right. Well, let's talk to our guy, Mike McKenna, NHL analyst from dailyfaceoff.com, former NHL goalie as well. Mike, how are you?
Well, I am pretty good. I thought it was a pretty slow-moving day, and all of a sudden this Fiala trade seems to have blown things up. So we got plenty to talk about now, man. There's no slowing down in the offseason.
No one is having a better day than Kevin Fiala when you get 55 sheets deposited in your bank account, or you know what's on its way eventually. So he lands in L.A. What do you think of the fit, and what do you think of Minnesota's options that they had here?
Well, L.A. needed scoring. You know, you look at the series against Edmonton, and it was pretty much one line that was carrying the Kings. And they got good efforts from Moore and Grundstrom. But, you know, where do those players slot in alongside Deneau? Are they really second line? Are they third line players? There's definitely things to think about with that group. And missing Arvidsson didn't help much either. So, you know, Iofalo, Kopitar, Kempe, you know those are top three players, Deneau as well. And you add Fiala into that mix, who really fits what, to me, the LA Kings are trying to accomplish. They're trying to be a fast team. They're trying to play with pace. And Fiala can do all of that. I think the contract is pretty much about as expected. I thought he'd come in above 7.5 for sure. I wasn't sure if he'd get to 8. So being just under that's not very surprising. And I think realistically, when you look at it from the Minnesota Wild standpoint, they're banking on Matthew Boldy having a great season and being able to pick up some of that slack that Fiala is leaving. I mean, you can't, it's not very often you let 85 points and 33 goals walk out the door. And that's not what Bill Guerin did. He did get a first round pick and a nice prospect coming back his direction. But that's important stuff for that team. You know, like Minnesota needs to grab those picks. They need to have depth coming back the other direction because they've got that huge salary cap crunch coming this year and next year with the Suter and Parise buyouts.
Yeah, I'd hate to be a Pacific Division defenseman right now having to potentially deal with Adrian Kempe and Kevin Fiala on the same line because they are fast, and we saw what Kempe could do last year, 35 goals in his own right. Now, if we look at this deal and we look at the LA Kings, according to Kevin Weeks, they're not done yet. Apparently, the Kings are still looking to use their prospect pool. This kind of seems like it's all pointing towards Jacob Chychrun, doesn't it?
I would think so. You know, you look at what that club could really use, and he certainly fits the bill. I mean, they need a little bit of everything, I think, is the best way to put it for the Kings, because it's not just they need the scoring. They also need to have some defense that's at hand and ready to be able to chip in offensively. And I think you saw when Doughty was out, especially in playoffs, that, you know, there wasn't much of that. Sean Durzi's a great talent. I love him. His game is growing. He's a big part of that club. But beyond him, where are you looking? You've got Doughty coming back, but it's pretty thin from there. So I think really now if you start to slot in, now you're going to have Doughty, Edler, Durzi. If you could put a Chychrun into that mix, man, watch out, because I think everybody's looking at a team like Colorado and how mobile they are on defense and how well they can move that puck up ice. Boy, that's a premium. So there's plenty of stock in LA. They have a ton of prospects there. They have draft picks, even though I would say giving away this first-round pick for Fiala would dampen the ability to make those types of moves. But as far as pure prospects, there's quite a few in LA and some that are probably looking for a change of scenery.
Who does this hurt in the Pacific Division the most? Randy Pinar saying, and we both thought Calgary is probably the one that says, oh, man, one of our competitors just got a lot better. Vancouver is still kind of going through their process, but if I'm Calgary, I'm probably worried the most.
Yeah, I don't think realistically teams are looking at deals and worrying, because you try to build your best club that you possibly can. I think that everybody knew going into this offseason that a team like LA, who's really right on the cusp, they would be a team making a lot of moves trying to better themselves, because they've done pretty much what they can through the draft. And now it's down to making some trades and some signings in LA. Now, if you're out there in the Pacific and you're thinking Calgary, well, yeah, I mean, they've got plenty of pressure as is. Like, if they don't bring back Goudreau and Tkachuk, I don't know where that team is. I just don't. I don't know how you replace those two. And the rest of the crew out there, you're going to have to contend with Vegas. I think Vegas is going to be better next year. And if they're healthy, which is all they need, they will be better. They will be in the mix again. Edmonton was good. And those are the teams that I think are probably looking at it and thinking, okay, well, we know LA's taking our next step, and we've got to be able to contend with them when the puck drops in the season.
Before this trade happened, Mike, we were, believe it or not, talking about JT Miller here in Vancouver Radio. And
I can't believe that.
I know. It's so surprising. And I was kind of going through it, and to be honest, like when we talk contract, there's a couple of names that we're just like, oh, Mika Zibanejad, you probably want that. But, you know, there's not a lot of players that in the league that have contracts right now that were signed when they either turn 29 or it kicks in when they're 30. And JT, if he goes to free agency, will sign it when he's 30 years old. And it's just a really tough spot to be in. And he's coming off a 99-point season, fantastic season for him. And, you know, the conversation Randy Porter and I were having before the show is it turned into, okay, is JT Miller a franchise player? Because it's tough at this age to say, hey, we're going to dedicate the franchise to you. We're going to give you the contract that signifies you're a franchise player. He's got the capabilities, obviously, now with the 99-point season. But when you look at JT, is he a franchise player?
It's tough to put that label on anyone. I don't think JT Miller fits that mold. I mean, he has a big season that's undeniable, and he's had other great seasons. You know, he ends up in the top 10 in scoring. But franchise players to me are the ones that you look at in their mid-20s and you think, wow, we're going to get the best 8 to 10 years of this guy's career. And you have to develop them from within. They're typically not a 31-year-old player, because we do see that decline. It's pretty rare that a player can go on a 7-year deal through age 38 and be able to continually be in the top 10 in scoring. It just doesn't happen. So I think it's ageism that's going to run mostly counter to what JT Miller would be labeled as. And I'm not big on labels in the first place, even though I appreciate where we're headed with this discussion, because that's kind of what you have to decide with JT Miller. Like, is this a player you just simply can't get rid of if you're the Vancouver Canucks? Or is it worth, you know, letting go of a player who you know is eventually going to decline to be able to either draft or pull somebody else in that's a little bit younger? And do you let some of your young players take a bigger role? So I wouldn't define Miller as that as a franchise type of player. But at this stage of the game, he's also, man, if you need a centerman, if you're Washington, if you're Carolina, you're looking awful hard at JT Miller, I think, for next season.
Well, you mentioned Carolina there, and that's a team that's trying to kind of hit that next level. They've had a couple of moments. They couldn't beat Boston in the playoffs for a couple of years. This year, they finally get past them, but have an issue getting through the conference in the New York Rangers. Now, how aggressive do you think they're going to be? Because it feels like there's rumblings that, you know, Kevin Fiala's traded, 25 years old, but the Carolina Hurricanes have a 23-year-old, Martin Nechas, that apparently is in trade talks and rumors and all that. Like, do you feel this team is going to do something big and shake it up?
Well, Martin Nechas might be a decent target for an offer sheet. And you start to wonder, even Montreal, we had a piece out on Daily Faceoff from our own Frank Saravalli today outlining how that might be a real possibility for Nechas to possibly head somewhere on an offer sheet. When I look at Carolina, that's a team that needs superstars, man. Like, one, two. Like, and I love Aho. I think Aho would be much more highly regarded in a bigger market where he'd get more publicity. But has he truly shown to be a game-changing player? And that's, you talk about game-changing, you need a sniper, man. And I know that there's a lot of players that need to get signed in Carolina. They've got $19 million or so worth of cap to work with, and they probably got to get 6 or 7 players under contract to be able to do that. But I don't know, man. That team to me is really good, but it needs a next step. And I feel like they need to make a trade that's going to make that team better. And it may not necessarily be a straight-up hockey trade. It could be for you know, a pending UFA or RFA or the rights or whatever it is. But I really look at someone like Philip Forsberg and think this is a guy who could change Carolina's dynamic. And if they'd have to make a trade in advance of him coming in as a free agent, 42 goals, think of a top line of Svechnikov, Aho, and Forsberg. That'd be scary. That's a different dynamic from what Carolina's had before. So, yes, if I'm Don Waddell, if I'm the Carolina Hurricanes, I'm ready to swing big this offseason because, like, guys, they've been very good for too long. They need to be great, and I think they're right at that edge. They've got a fantastic coach, but they need to make something that's going to get them a little bit more dynamic in what they do and able to have game-changing players.
The other thing we were talking about, we didn't get a chance to because the Fiala trade happens while we were talking about JT Miller, is you know the name we were bringing up was Logan Couture, who's had a lot of playoff success, 65 points in his last 60 playoff games. JT doesn't have necessarily that track record, and if you're looking at a contract comparable, you say, hey, 8x8, then sign it up. How much do you believe playoff production factors into getting paid in relation to regular season production?
Oh, man, it's so real. Like, you look at some of the things that are going on around the league and how, you know, Val Nichushkin now is just like the hottest property imaginable. Right. And I still remember a couple of years ago in Dallas when he didn't score a goal during the year. Okay. And I understand, like, I'm looking at two different scenarios here. But if I'm a GM, I'm scared by that still. That still makes me nervous. You know, can he really do what he did in Colorado somewhere else? And you look at a playoff run where he obviously played a huge role for the club, and it's going to carry him. I think it's real. And you see it with goalies a lot. You know, a goalie has a hot 15, 20 games in playoffs, and they are the guy. Remember, years ago, Yaroslav Halak was outstanding in playoffs for the Montreal Canadiens, and he was the hot ticket on the market after that. And the Blues ended up trading for him, gave up an awful lot. He wasn't a free agent, but it gave his market value a huge shot, a huge boost. So I think it's real. Every GM wants to find players that they believe can perform under pressure. It kind of bucks the trend of someone like Kevin Fiala, who's gone missing the last 2 years in playoffs. You know, it's a little bit of the opposite of that with what just happened in LA. But I think absolutely GMs look for players that can shine on the big stage, and they use that as a metric for what that player can do when things matter most.
Well, you mentioned Valeri Nichushkin there for a second. And if I'm the Colorado Avalanche, obviously you have limited cap space. You got to sign some guys. Nichushkin's a UFA. Nazem Kadri's a UFA. What's that priority, the number one priority? Is it signing the guy that got Selke votes from the wing, or is it the player that showed you he's money in the playoffs and during the regular season this year in Kadri?
I would really prioritize Kadri because I have such a belief that centermen are of a premium that you just can't get very often. And I think it's going to be tough now, when, especially like when you look at Washington with Backstrom out maybe forever. Like, that's a team that's going to throw, no doubt in my mind, throw big money at Kadri. But like, think about the perspective of the player, man. Colorado is a great place to play. And you've already seen Gabriel Landeskog take a pretty big haircut to play there. You know, that wasn't as big a deal as he could have signed elsewhere. What's Naz Kadri willing to do to stay in a place that he just won a Stanley Cup and he loves playing at? Or does he just want to straight cash it in? I think you've got to try to make it work. And I think Colorado, if they get creative, can make it happen. You know, you always look at players that they have, but who could they subtract? Like, I hate trade rumors for players that don't deserve it. But like, if you're Sam Girard and you got, I think he's got 5 years left at $5 million, like, you've got to be nervous right now because Bowen Byram just put on a clinic in playoffs. Cale Makar's there. Devon Taves is there. Like, you get rid of Girard's $5 million deal, and all of a sudden you're looking at being able to possibly bring back Kadri.
Right.
And at least bring back one of Nichushkin or Burakovsky. And you bring back one of those two, you let Newhook or O'Connor go a little higher in the lineup, and you find out what they can do because those prospects also deserve it. So there's a lot of moving parts in Colorado, but I think if they want Kadri, I think they're going to make a strong push for it, and I wouldn't rule it out.
Talking to Mike McKenna, who joins us every Wednesday at 1:30 on The People Show, at Mike McKenna 56, if you want to follow him on Twitter. You mentioned Jared Bednar before. He's had his up and downs as the Colorado Avalanche coach. He gets his Stanley Cup. It's a fantastic moment for him. And I still feel like he almost got overlooked in all the hoopla of the ceremony of everything, of Nathan MacKinnon got his, Cale Makar, the coronation, Landeskog, and it just seems like Jared Bednar just kind of got overlooked. What makes him good?
I had a great conversation this morning here comes a shameless self-promotion on the Suitcase and Scribe podcast, which I do weekly. Typically, it's myself and Scott Burnside, longtime writer who works with us at Daily Faceoff. But this week, we had a substitute. We had Suitcase and Suitcase, and it was Derek Nesbitt, a player who spent 1,000. He's played 1,000 games in the minors between the American League and the ECHL. And Nesbitt had Jared Bednar as a coach in Peoria in the American Hockey League in the Blues organization a decade ago. And he described how Bednar would show up at the apartments and sit down and talk shop with the guys and like bounce it off the leaders and do it over a case of beer. And, you know, and it wasn't because Bednar wanted to be one of the guys. Like, it was because he was trying to really figure out what makes his team tick. And we both came to the conclusion that there's no better coach on earth at this point, probably, for Nathan MacKinnon. You see how, like, nobody wears it on their sleeve like MacKinnon. Like, he's so emotional and passionate during games, and he gets over the edge occasionally. And you can just see Bednar be willing to, like, all right, go ahead, talk it out. And Nesbitt and I both talked about seeing the smirk on Bednar's face and just, okay, you done yet, Nathan? Okay, now here's what I see, right? Like, he's a coach that feeds on communication and, like, even, like, friendly rivalry or disagreement, because a lot of times disagreement makes you better. And he's just a great communicator. And Nesbitt and I both agreed that we thought Bednar really understood what today's players need. He's the player you'd want to be able to play for. He's a player you'd want to grab a beer with. And that's not because he's your buddy. It's because you respect what he has to say as a coach and you value it. And I think he deserves all the credit in the world. He made some adjustments in the finals that really propelled Colorado to that Stanley Cup victory. It wasn't all roster. It wasn't just Tampa Bay being injured. Bednar did a great job.
You're listening to The People Show. We're joined by Mike McKenna of DailyFaceoff.com. And silly season has begun now with this Kevin Fiala deal. Free agency is July 13th, so not that far away, but just over 2 weeks away. When we look at the goalie options on the market, in the UFA market, Ville Husso, Jack Campbell, Darcy Kemper, Marc-Andre Fleury in a different part of his career, what's the best option for you, Mike, out of those four guys?
Oh, I mean, I think it depends what you want, okay? Like, if you want somebody that you can tie down for the next 3, 4, 5 years and probably know what you're going to get, it's Darcy Kemper. Although I do have a little bit of concern to his game as he ages. Now, it came out today that he had to do a ton of work to get his eye back into shape, and that makes sense in playoffs because he wasn't tracking the puck very well. You could see that, and I think a lot of that was attributed to his eye injury, but Kemper was lights out for a lot of the year for Colorado. So you know what you're going to get in him, but he's going to want a long-term deal, and he just won the Stanley Cup. So it's going to cost you, too. Like, you're looking easy, $5-6 million, probably 5 years, 4 or 5 years, I'd think, for him. Marc-Andre Fleury, you could go out and get on a one-year deal, but he's got to feel like it's the right fit for you. And where is he willing to go? There's unknowns there. Jack Campbell, can he carry it over the whole season? Who knows? I think the one that holds the cards is probably Ville Husso. Because for the majority of this season, he was the starter for the St. Louis Blues. He did lose the crease to Jordan Binnington in playoffs. And Binnington, to his credit, worked his way back into that role and performed really well for that club in St. Louis down the stretch and in playoffs. But Husso's 27 years old. He's on the cusp of being a starter in the NHL, and you could get him at a pretty fair price, I think. I mean, I would guess Husso's probably 3 years at $3-3.5 million, maybe four at the very top if you're feeling like you're in a pinch and you gotta fight somebody for a contract. But if you're a team like Edmonton that's who knows what their goalie crease looks like next year, doesn't Ville Husso look really good to you right now? Like, even if you get Mike Smith back for one more year, you let him go with Husso. Or if Smith doesn't come back, maybe you run with Husso and Skinner. I don't know what the case is there, but they need some experience. And I think he kind of holds the key to the market because there's going to be a lot of clubs looking at the UFA market at Husso.
He is Mike McKenna. We talk to him every week here on The People Show at Mike McKenna 56, an NHL analyst at DailyFaceoff.com. Mike, appreciate it. We'll talk next week.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me as always.
The great Mike McKenna joining us here. Bick Nizar, Randeep Janda, and you as well, 650-650 into the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. A lot of reactions still coming in on the Kevin Fiala trade, Randy.
And linking back to the Vancouver Canucks, what does this mean for JT Miller? What does this mean for Brock Besser? I think one thing is clear on this front. Focus has shifted to certain other players on the market. Mm-hmm. Now, Kevin Fiala was a big, big name.
He was a shiny toy. He was yesterday's news now.
Yeah. Now you start looking at, all right, who else is available? We've heard that the Canucks, during the season even, tried to gauge what the prices on their players were. Now, how does that shift? And I'm not going to lie, while we were talking to Mike there, I was doing my own exercise of looking at that late first round, seeing if there's teams that might profile, what kind of prospects do you have? And I go back to, I don't know how if this is going to happen, but we've heard links to the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Mm-hmm.
Topi Niemelä, right defenseman, taken later in the draft than a Brock Faber. But, you know, there are certain teams and certain prospects you start looking at after this deal. If you're saying, okay, if a Brock Besser is available, if he's available, that's a big question. But if you're starting to look and compare the price paid for Kevin Fiala to what a Brock Besser deal could get you, it's kind of along the same lines where late first, maybe a very early second, and then a prospect of substance. You're not going to get the same type of package because Kevin Fiala is a better player, but I'm starting to look at those, and Topi Niemelä is a name we heard coming out of Toronto. You started looking towards St. Louis. You started looking towards Montreal. Who knows who needs wingers right now, but you do start looking at the draft and saying, if the Canucks are going to add another draft pick and try to go younger here, that's one option. The other thing I had here, Bick, was for a team that's rebuilding or needs cap relief, like the Minnesota Wild, you take prospects, you take the pick. Do the Canucks strike you as that team that they're going to do that, though?
I'll go back to 22 to 25-year-olds.
The most common thing, and I think with JT Miller...
We'd all love to be 22 and 25-year-old.
We talked about that with the JT... Absolutely. Some of us still feel that way, but are humbled every now and then when we realize we're not. But the Brock Besser deal, if it happens, if there's a trade partner out there, if the Canucks want to trade him, because his trade value is not the greatest with that qualifying offer, and if you're not looking for prospects similar to the standard or below the standard that Kevin Fiala got, because you're not going to get that deal, does a hockey trade make more sense? Does a winger for a defenseman make more sense? You can look across the board. You can look across the league. John Marino's name is out there, others, but is that a deal that's more realistic on the Brock Besser front, if it happens? Not the JT Miller one, but the Brock Besser, I start to think that's probably a little bit more realistic.
We'll talk about it more on the other side, but Irfan Ghaffar did tweet out kind of an update on Brock, saying, with just over a week left before the draft and just over a week until July 11th, that is the arbitration deadline as well, talks between the Canucks and Besser camp have been pretty quiet. Believe there is some interest from other teams on Brock. QO is $7.5 million. Let's see what happens here. That, again, from Irfan Ghaffar earlier today on Twitter, at Irf Ghaffar, if you want to go follow him. We'll talk about it more on the other side. Continue to talk about what the Fiala trade means in relation to both the Brock Besser trade market and the JT Miller contract market, because the Fiala signs a deal, 7.9 over 7 years, and I think a lot of people immediately react, say, well, JT Miller, he's probably going to want more. Are we sure about that? I'm sure JT wants more, but I'm not sure these are direct comparables just based on where these two players are in their own careers. And we'll expand on that question we asked Mike as well. Is JT a franchise player? More on that. And Sam Cosentino will join us previewing the NHL draft in the next hour here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.